When you think of DIY, what do you think of? Well, you probably think of sloppy or unskilled or untidy work. But today, DIY has taken on a brand new meaning. DIY represents a customer's choice, a consumer's choice to have a more meaningful connection to the inner workings of items that could otherwise be easily purchased. I want to introduce you to our brand new report that we just put together in partnership with Gladly, and it's talking about the new DIY. That's the name of the report, the new DIY, creators, crafts, and commerce. And this trend isn't just confined to arts and crafts. It is expansive, and it incorporates everything from electronics to robotics to stock trading and real estate investment. And we are proving out the theory that trends that begin on social media culminate in purchases on Amazon, which inspire another wave of social media posts. This cycle of purchase intent is linked to social media inspiration, and we can see it. We can plot it out, and we do that in our newest report. I'm really stoked about it. You can get the report today over at futurecommerce.fm/thenewDIY. That's futurecommerce.fm/thenewDIY. Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex Cloud is for businesses of all sizes, from small and medium-sized businesses all the way to enterprise. You can find out how Vertex can help your business by visiting them online at vertexcloud.com/futurecommerce. Future Commerce is brought to you by Omnisend. Omnisend is way more than just email marketing. Drive more sales and combine more channels with one platform. Learn more about Omnisend today at omnisend.com/futurecommerce. Future Commerce is brought to you by Shipium. Did you know that customer experience is linked to your supply chain? That's right. Your supply chain dictates how your customers feel about your brand. Well, Shipium helps you compete by ensuring that your supply chain meets the brand promises that you make to customers. Find out if Shipium is a fit for you by visiting shipium.com/podcast. That's shipium.com/podcast. Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
And I'm Brian. And today we have Jason Murray with us, co-founder of Shipium. Welcome, Jason.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the show. I gather by the word Shipium that you guys make things ship. I'm Perry Mason, basically. I feel like I've deduced it.
We help with the process, the complicated process of getting things to people. Shipium helps with the technology to enable that.
It's kind of a magic trick, the way that things show up on your front step, right?
It is. It's a series of events that need to be coordinated to do it well, to give everyone the right customer experience and do it in a cost-effective way. And so our belief is that coordination should happen with good technology, and that's where Shipium comes in.
You said cost-effective. That sounds almost impossible. Tell us about yourself and, you know, how you got started with the Shipium. And I think maybe that will help us understand better how you're able to do what you do.
I had a really long career at Amazon, and I kind of accidentally stepped into almost 20 years. And I stepped into most of my career was focused on the merger of logistics and technology. And so early years, I worked on the technology and the fulfillment centers, and then I helped launch FBA. And, you know, those concepts that we developed in those years are still in play today about how to run a warehouse, single piece flow out of the warehouse, et cetera. My biggest accomplishment, though, was in the later years at Amazon. I actually led the effort to reimagine Amazon's supply chain to support Amazon Prime. And basically, how do you make two-day shipping a viable business as it became clear that Prime was going to be a big deal and customers really wanted it? So the story behind Shipium, though, is my co-founder and I actually started working at Amazon within a week of each other in 1999. We both worked together on fulfillment center technology in the early 2000s. Mac, my co-founder, eventually went off to Zooli. And both of us, though, ended up building these parallel software stacks that were responsible for managing the supply chain, the delivery promise, how you place inventory, how you manage carriers, how you route shipments. And we reconnected in 2019 and started discussing this idea that there was a huge gaping hole of missing software to support the now booming e-commerce industry. And so you either pay someone to do everything for you, which tends to be super expensive once you get past a certain size, or you use 90s era supply chain software that wasn't really built for e-commerce in the first place. So, you know, that was the impetus. And Mac and I really wanted to start building a platform that would enable partners and companies to basically run their logistics operations efficiently and in a cost-effective way, which involves the data science, the scaled software, and, you know, domain expertise to do it correctly.
I had this. So, wow. Number one. Number two, I was a kid and I remember watching Jurassic Park, right? And, when Jurassic Park came out, there was a lot of discussion around how Silicon Graphics and Industrial Light and Magic wanted to create these effects. But to create these effects, they had to create the software by which you would design the effects, which meant they had to create the rendering systems, which meant they had to create the computer hardware that would run on top of everything. And I feel like the world of e-commerce has matured to a place where we don't understand the pains that early trailblazers had to go through to create the systems, right? That's an incredible thing. I mean, not so long ago, we had to build e-commerce platforms bespoke, like from scratch with, you know, code. And nowadays we just click a few buttons, you know, sign up for Stripe and you're done. I feel like we discount the complexity of what it used to be. Is there something in the, like in the shipping space right now? I say the shipping space because I have no idea what I'm talking about, but like logistics that has a similar paradigm. Like, why Shipium? Like, is there a similar problem to solve to create the systems that create the systems? And it's like, is that the opportunity that you see in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way I would probably describe it is that once companies reach a certain size, the physical properties of what they're shipping becomes kind of an important part of how the customer experience works and how their cost structure overall. And so what happens when you reach a certain size threshold and you have some economies of scale is you can start to put together a custom solution that fits your particular need. That's either, you know, packaging, shipping out packed underwear. It's maybe a mailer that's for fine, you know, really high-end clothing that you want to portray a certain customer experience, or it's, you know, your boxes need to be a bit stronger because you've got lots of heavy, tiny items in there that you don't want to get damaged. And so it becomes more cost-effective to build it out yourself. But putting all of that together and coordinating it does require software. It requires that you have to coordinate all these different pieces. And I would say, like, maybe the way to think about it is 80% of the stuff that you use for fulfillment in e-commerce is the same, but there's usually 20% that's kind of specific to the physical properties that you're driving because of exactly what your business is. And so, you know, I would liken that to, using your example, it probably is a lot like, you know, the formation before there was an OpenGL in the graphic space.
Yep.
You know, everyone wrote everything from scratch. You know, I mean, I grew up in that era in computer science, and I had I had friends in the gaming industry, and I'd watch what they were doing, and they were literally with assembly language writing the entire game from scratch every time. Right. And that's kind of, I think we're kind of starting to make that transition to, there should be some basic building blocks and basic pieces that you can use to put together your supply chain.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. As Philip noted, we are in no way logistics experts. And I think something that would help us and our audience, be able to understand, what you're doing and why you entered this space in 2019 would be to give us a little bit of an overview of the logistics landscape right now. Like, who are the players? What are the pieces that are required to sort of create a logistics experience that gets you all the way to last mile to your customer, and what are the pieces of technology that are required, and who's involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So, in general, the logistics space is extremely fragmented, because of how it's a very old industry and how it's grown up, and there's a combination of mom and pop offerings as well as, bigger companies that have tried to consolidate, but overall very fragmented. Companies like Amazon and Walmart are getting increasingly vertical. And so you can see with Amazon that their solution to that problem is just to own everything up and down the stack. So they've got their own warehouses, they've got their own employees, they've got their own transportation offering now in many different forms. They're even talking about these middle mile solutions that even do the kind of the long hauls between these FCs. I mean, Amazon even owns 747s now. So they're that's their approach, right? They're going to do everything. And I would almost, you'd almost liken it to them owning, car manufacturers at some point owned the steel industry, I guess, because they were the ones that were consuming so much steel, and they needed to do it efficiently. But what we see in general is that there's a lot of competition focused on smaller businesses. And this manifests itself with, things like helping you with label printing if you're running from the garage, or the other form of it is something like a completely vertical solution that you send us your inventory and we'll handle everything. But because of what I mentioned earlier, the solution for everybody kind of ends up being not good for anybody.
That's true.
And that's because once you, as companies get larger, they generally want to take more control over their operations because they have enough volume to reach economies of scale, and they benefit from tailoring the physical processes to specific needs of their business. Things like more exact box sizes, inserts, the pick processes start to matter. Specific packaging for underwear, beautiful mailers for high-end fashion companies. All that stuff is important and a critical part of both your customer experience as well as how your company's cost structure plays out. And so, to me, ultimately, logistics is much more than just the FedEx label you put on your box. It's the entire linear sequence of making and delivering products. The key insight is that linear sequence is very different for e-commerce and has its own areas to optimize. I talk about the full spectrum of this in our blog. The bigger the company is, though, the more optimizing each link in the chain matters to the success and scale of that business.
We have conversations all the time with a retailer that says, we have to compete with Amazon. And my sense is, well, let's look at the things you're doing right now and let's see where you're not competing with Amazon. Right now, you are dependent on a third-party logistics firm to handle your customer experience from a fulfillment point of view. Is that the best in class solution? Is that the way you're going to compete with Amazon? That's how you're going to do it? Most companies, when they think that, they're thinking about front end experience, but everything that happens after the purchase is the thing that actually makes customers happy,
right? It's like you can elicit a purchase, but can you actually create a repeat customer? Can you actually fulfill on the promise that you made to them to begin with? Like all of that's operational, happens after the purchase. And I feel like this rhetoric around competing is rhetoric, because I don't think that companies understand how or when to make an investment to bring that capability up to that, like to actually compete on that promise, to invest in logistics in a way that actually would make it differentiating. But I don't know if you have any response to that. I feel like I'm just pontificating at this point.
I think you need to be it's I think the part of what you see is that companies get overwhelmed, right? They see Amazon with 100 warehouses and doing next day shipping, and it becomes this, it becomes like a overwhelming, challenge to try to get to that level immediately, right? It ends up being probably more of a journey where even Amazon early days, 2003, say, I mean, they were making continual improvements on how they thought about delivery experience and understood from an early point that it was a key part of the customer experience. And so I think the main thing is, you're continually trying to improve what your fulfillment experience looks like, because you recognize that it's a key part of how customers are going to view your company. And so, it's going to be a journey. Amazon itself gets better every year. And I think, as an e-commerce company, if you're going to be serious about it, you have to continue to improve that process and continue to change it over time, just like you are. Websites in 2005 look a lot different than websites today.
Is that, I guess there's maybe a delta, like a misconception, like in my mind, between what logistics is and what an e-commerce brand might think logistics is, like to a particular, to a particular e-commerce or direct-to-consumer brand, they might think that it's, I print a label and UPS takes the product from me, or I send it off to my to my warehouse where I, some contract labor does that for me. Is that logistics though? It's not logistics, is it?
I don't think it is. I think it's the coordination of all those pieces. I mean, one thing I think you see a lot of is some of this probably came from an era, the old era of retail, where the logistics arm of a company was really about distributing the product. And then it got to the store, and then the actual merchandising and how it was presented to the customer was handled there. And I think the one of the ahas is just that in the e-commerce space, logistics is heavily, heavily tied to the customer experience. It's basically, when are you going to get it? What's happening with it now? Is it in stock? Am I going to get a note in an hour that says we don't actually have this, right? All of those things are tied to the overall customer experience, which, doesn't really, if you go to a store, it's not there. It's basically, it's just, you say it's not there. I can't get it, right? But in the e-commerce experience, if you're wrong about what you're presenting to the customer through that whole chain, you're going to end up looking really bad. And so I think that's a critical thing. But the other component is just of how much everything in logistics depends on the previous steps. You think about as customers, it matters where you put the inventory when you ordered it in the first place, because that's going to get it closer to a customer. And once it's closer to a customer, it's cheaper and faster to ship it to that customer. It matters, how you're draining that inventory from the fulfillment center, because that's going to affect, what future customers will see in terms of their offering. Mm-hmm. And so all of those different pieces are tied together. And it's obviously a stochastic process that needs to try to account for all of these uncertain futures. But you have to kind of account for all of that if you're gonna do a good job.
So, Brian, we had this conversation yesterday, I think, where I said, I don't know if this is true. I sense this to be true. If you were to do something like, let's say you launch, you know, a small brand in a small town, you know, my town here west of West Palm Beach has, you know, 25,000 people in it. And so if I were to, you know, create a small storefront and say, I'm going to get, you know, every product in the store within 1 hour to everybody, I think that's really feasible, right? Like,
yeah,
pizza chains do that all the time. It's mm-hmm. when I widen the scope or I widen the aperture to try to scale that business is where I think technology is the thing that allows you to deliver your promise at scale. And because I think if you don't have scale and you have a very small, if your scale is quite small, you could probably power through with manpower. You could probably deliver a pretty tall promise to a customer if mm-hmm. if your scope was small enough. But it's technology that I think adds the scale component.
Well, and especially going into this holiday season, like we've seen I think a scale for e-commerce that we haven't seen before, right? And this is the interesting thing about what we're going into this holiday season right now. Like e-commerce has been scaling up in 2020 at a rate we've never seen. 3 months of, you know, 3 months of growth equal 10 years of growth.
yes. Yeah.
This is a scale problem. We're about to launch into Shipageddon. Shipageddon is real. And
Shipageddon. Yeah. What's your reaction to that there, Jason? I'm curious what you think about that.
I think first of all, so because of the physical capacity requirements of e-commerce, there's a legitimate planning, you know, you use the what you think your volume is going to be in the future to do things like build capacity, hire labor, train labor, make sure it's up to speed ahead of these points. And like anything else in our society, if everything's running in a stable way, those things tend to kind of follow these nice law of large numbers. It's going to get 20% bigger next year, and here's where I need to add buildings, and mm-hmm. these, you know, all of the historical statistical models work really well, like the way we think about things. And you know, I mean, I think what's been so interesting about the pandemic is just that you've seen maybe just to take a step back, for example, at Amazon, holidays, you know, there's a whole team and system and processes in place to deal with the fact that you're going to be selling four times the volume that you do Q4 as you do in other quarters. And so you hire ahead of that, you train temp workers, you make sure your building capacity is ready. And all of those things, they happen months in advance to basically make that dance go smoothly when Q4 comes around. And it's always challenging anyway. But, you know, the thing is, what you saw this year was everyone was kind of thrown with a really intense Q4 with a week's worth of notice, right? And they had just kind of come off of the last Q4. So I think, you know, just in fairness to these networks, to the UPSs, the FedExes, et cetera, they did not have time to plan for this, right? It was not something that they, you know, when they were doing their review of capital expenditures in 2020, you know, no one was saying, oh, don't forget to add the pandemic in and build 50 more buildings, right? It was much more about like, we're going to grow 20, you know, we've left Amazon, we're going to take a hit from that, we're going to grow 10%, you know, this year, whatever, I'm making up the number, but everybody was planning around those types of numbers, and this thing hits. And so you basically have now way more demand than you have supply for shipments. And so I think for the most part, these carriers have been trying to play catch up since the beginning of the year. And I think the worry is that you've got not only the pandemic multiplier, but now you potentially have this holiday multiplier, which no one knows. Everyone knows there's going to be some multiplier. You know, we're not we're not going to cancel the holidays as a result of the pandemic, but no one's sure how much. And so, you know, but I think it's very clear that there's going to be a bigger supply problem than we've seen in almost ever because of the combination of the pandemic and the holidays meshing together. You know, and then on top of that, I think these other things that could kind of offset the need for carriers, the buy online and pick up in store, you know, these processes have been kind of exposed as having, they were not tested like they're being tested now. And I think, you know, it takes a lot of coordination for a clothing store to support buy online, pick up in store. You need to have your inventory synced. You need to have a process worked out about how all that pickup's going to happen. And, you know, that's an area you could potentially offset some of these carrier issues. But frankly, the everyone was not ready for this new shift that consumers are really excited about not having to go in the store and be around other people. You know, that was not something that was essentially planned for. And so in general, you know, I just think that it's a real, the biggest factor is everyone has been playing catch up in 2020 in this space in general. And like we talked about earlier, it's, you've got the chaining of events that the carriers are under duress. The e-commerce companies are under duress for having too much, you know, too much volume, and everyone is kind of playing catch up throughout this year. And we've now got this, you know, you've already thrown the gas on the fire, and now you're going to throw toss the propane tank on there. I'm not sure.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex Cloud is the automation platform for tax calculation and use tax and everything in between for businesses of all sizes. From SMB all the way to enterprise, businesses all over the world trust Vertex for their tax calculation needs, and you should too. Check them out today at vertexcloud.com/futurecommerce. OmniSend is one platform to control all of your marketing channels. From marketing automation, SMS, and email, to forms and segmentation, you can bring together different channels under one platform with OmniSend. OmniSend's powerful platform allows you to link together every customer touchpoint with one dashboard. And did I mention they have the most transparent pricing in the entire MarTech industry? Find out why brands like Fred Siegel and Unilever trust OmniSend with their customer relationships. Find out more about OmniSend today at omnisend.com/futurecommerce. Future Commerce is brought to you by Shipium. Consumer behavior is reshaping the future of commerce. Customers want their orders fast or free. They want convenient returns. They want to know exact delivery dates. They want curbside pickup. It's here to stay. There really is no shortage of things e-commerce companies need to do in order to compete. How can you stay nimble and also be profitable? Well, enter Shipium, the supply chain platform for e-commerce. Shipium is founded by Amazon and Zulily Vets, and it's the platform that brings the same principles and sophisticated software found in those companies to everyone else who is not Amazon. Manage core pieces of your stack like shipping and fulfillment with Shipium. See if Shipium is a fit for your team by visiting shipium.com/podcast. That's shipium.com/podcast.
Speaking of propane, so you're tossing propane tank on the fire. what happens after holiday? That's the question I have as well. So the insane scale up to try and address this demand that's, you know, that probably isn't going to be properly addressed in holiday. Like there's going to be a lot of disappointed kids on Christmas and other holidays. what happens after we go through this process and it doesn't really work, and then we are coming back down off the holidays, but we don't really know like what the level of demand is going to be after that? How are people going to respond?
You know, my feeling is that there's going to be some, you know, there's going to be some amount of regression back to the mean, right? Mm-hmm. But I believe pretty strongly that, you know, when these events happen, when the customer behavior changes in some way, people just don't tend to go back to normal. So I think, you know, you are going to, my prediction personally is that coming out of the pandemic, e-commerce is not going to go back to its previous levels. It's going to continue to be much higher than it's been. And it's just frankly, people need a push sometimes to buy online, change their buying behavior, change how they think about buying. But once they get a taste of it, they're not going to just go back. You know, you realize like, hey, I don't have to go to the store now. I can do X, Y, and Z online. And so I don't see it as something that's going to just reset to normal. And, you know, so if I talk a little bit about Amazon again and think the closest analogy I have to something like this is the 2008 recession. And, you know, mm-hmm. at the time that was happening, we all knew consumer spending was going down. We didn't really know what was going to happen in Amazon, but it you know, what ended up happening was there was Amazon at that time had really started focusing on systematically keeping their prices low. And you had this whole new population of people that were super price sensitive because you're now in this recession and people are concerned about money. And so they started looking online as a potential way to get better deals, to get better prices on their whatever they're buying. And, you know, it also kind of coincided to, I think it's interesting because the iPhone also was about out in 2007, which then people now, he now introduces this, like I can go to a store and actually check online, see what the price is. But all of that, you know, basically acted as this trigger that moved people to this online way of thinking that I can get better prices online. And it never really, you know, Amazon continued to grow through that pandemic, through that recession, which meant that they had taken essentially some of, you know, a disproportionate amount of the consumer spending volume into e-commerce. But that it didn't stop after that. After the recession kind of eventually subsided, people that had shifted over to e-commerce kind of stayed there. So the overall consumer spending kind of went back to normal, but the channel shift was now a more permanent thing. And I really think that we're going to see something similar with this pandemic. I think companies should not think of this as a temporary thing that they can kind of forget about it. They have to deal with for a year. They should think about it as we need to strategically put energy into solving our e-commerce challenges because this is the new way of the world.
Let me ask you about, let's put that under the lens of Shipageddon, if you will. and, you know, hat tip to Scott Wingo, who I think came up with the phrase, this idea of the constraint of supply that can't rise to meet the demand. How long, you know, like is Shipageddon something that we can get out ahead of in the next year or two? And if not, does that tamp down some of the excitement of the digital shift that you were just talking about? Like, could this be undone by just, you know, and the inability to meet the overwhelming demand?
You know, I think that the demand is going to be so strong and so apparent that someone's going to rise to the occasion. And what more so, I don't think the right question is really, will it be undone? But probably the more relevant question is, will some companies be undone because they were not able to rise to the occasion? But, you know, everyone's kind of giving the carriers a bit of a pass this year because it's been a very unique year. But you know, I would expect by next year that the expectation is they're going to catch up. And if they can't catch up, you're going to see a growth in local carriers. You're going to see a growth in alternate ways, you know, kind of new ship methods that are able to compete with those guys. And I, you know, it's hard to predict exactly what that's going to be, but, generally speaking, I think the demand is there for a reason. It's just inherently more compelling. And because of that, I think you're going to see some supply arise from this that meets that demand. And so I don't personally think, I think that there might be some missteps and people lose market share and that kind of thing. But I don't think that the overarching trend is it's enough. There's too much there to actually disrupt the trend.
Wow. Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I agree. It's interesting, you know, I think some of the things you were saying about, you know, e-commerce and Amazon and like how Amazon was able to sort of find a way there. I think that's super interesting. E-commerce loyalty, you know, we talk about brand a lot and, you know, I think we believe in brand and we talk about relationship to customer a lot and we believe in a relationship to customer, but there's still a ton of like price shopping out there. It happens on the web. People use, they're using Google Shopping more and more. They're using Amazon and they're comparing like direct prices on Amazon. You know, that flows all the way down in, you know, that experience, you know, the price experience. I feel like, you know, the connection to shipping and like, you know, basically stuff for a good price delivered fast was sort of Amazon's promise. In thinking back to even like 2008, you know, Amazon, you know, prior to the recession, you know, they were doing well, but like, I feel like that's the moment they really took off. Can you kind of talk through like what you saw there and like maybe some lessons we can learn from how Amazon responded to the last massive crisis that we saw?
Yeah. I mean, I think pricing was a big factor. I think it wasn't clear, you know, how do you think about pricing online? And probably in fairness, Amazon didn't have they weren't super clear on where they wanted to fit in that spectrum. You know, are they a low price company, or are they taking advantage of the convenience to sell to a you know, a less price sensitive crowd? That kind of thing was maybe not all worked out. I think it, you know, the thing that really emerged though is that if you think about it, just from a practical standpoint, if you're in a store, you're kind of limited by an actual physical sticker that you can put on the bin. And that's going to dictate how you change your prices, right? Like it's a lot of work. It's going to take a you know, to go through the store and make those changes. It's something that probably happens once a week, maybe less often than that, just because it's not a, you know, it's not free to have someone run around and print labels and stick them on there, right? And then imagine doing that kind of across all of your stores. And so you can kind of see the multiplication there. The internet was just a really interesting format because it lets you essentially change prices instantly. And I think, you know, you can think back to marketplace dynamics like eBay or, you know, eBay auctions or whatever kind of way you want to frame it. But to me, the most fascinating thing about that whole era was it lets you adjust prices dynamically and quickly. And it essentially entered this way to not only generally get lower prices, but essentially guarantee that you're not going to be able to find this price anywhere else lower. Right. I mean, that, you know, that's the crawlers and the everyone, you know, price comparison sites and all that stuff. It's something that, you know, if you had to be kind of a guy that was willing to drive from store to store and sort through coupon ads and stuff if you wanted to find the lowest prices back in the day. But nowadays, it was really just right at your fingertips. It's right, it's completely transparent, completely available if you're a consumer. And I think Amazon really leveraged that. You know, you had physical stores that were kind of, they're concerned about things like, I've got a price for this in my physical store. So even if I'm going to do an online offering, I want to make sure I keep it the same price, because customers are going to think it's really weird if they go into the store and it's higher than online. It's going to cause problems, right? But Amazon had this freedom to kind of say, we're going to dynamically price this thing, and consumers are going to start to figure that out, and their perception of where to get a good deal, they're going to figure out quickly that I can just look on here and figure out what the lowest price is. And that's a very, very powerful concept that really plays into the dynamicness of the internet and the ability to offer this wide variety of items and change the prices, change the shipping speed, all that stuff can kind of happen instantaneously. I think the other factor, you know, around that time with Amazon was just the Prime was starting to gain some ground, and it coincided with that. And that became, I have some intimate responsibility for being part of that whole push. And I think it became like, how do we innovate so that we can offer customers this faster shipping? We already are offering them great prices. So how do you do both of those things to really pick up the e-commerce baton and run with it?
It's like everything, right? In early adopters and channels, they have their challenges, but they enjoy a lower customer acquisition cost, and maybe they make the best of that channel. We're seeing a lot of this now play out in other new digital channels, which I feel like we've probably hit ad nauseum on this show in the past. But as more folks rush to e-commerce, like there's certainly something that I sense is happening the cost, like the cost and the barrier to entry is on the rise across the board. And there's certain businesses we covered last year, Blackstone investing $19 billion to e-com logistics, for instance. There's certainly those who have understood that there is an opportunity in the marketplace, and those early entrants are the ones who benefit the most. My sense is that the channel becomes prohibitively expensive to operate in the long term for these smaller direct-to-consumer brands. How can they compete, and how can they sort of fulfill on the promises that their customers are demanding of them, or like the expectations that the customers are demanding of them? Is that a losing battle over time?
Well, my answer is I think this is, this is something that you solve basically with technology, and the whole the magic of the world we live in is about the amount of data that we're able to look at to optimize these flows, and the scale of the software that's running is we live in magical times, right? It's amazing. It's amazing that work continued once we went into this pandemic, because we have video conferencing and all the, Google Docs and all the stuff you need to collaborate. But I think, for me, there's an element of a business. There's kind of stages of growth. And I think you have the early stage companies, they're probably super scrappy, or they've got something really compelling from a product standpoint, or, they've got a VC injection of money or some way to kind of, we're going to grow at all costs. And there's a point, I don't argue that that's maybe the right time to be really focused on how to get your costs down. Right. And so that, for that reason, there's a lot of offering that kind of make the process easy. But I do think, the point in time where you have enough scale to start really making a difference in both customer experience. So either you take your efficiencies and your combination of scale and you give it back to the customer in an experience standpoint, or you lower your fundamental cost structure so that you can go into other channels. Both of those things happen quickly, and I think we estimate it's probably more in the $25 million range where you start to see this is where I can start taking advantage of my scale. This is where I can start leveraging my scale and my assets to basically either, reapply this benefit to customer experience and gain longer term loyalty, or again, bring the cost down to just generally make your business more viable and allow you to expand in different ways, or even put the money into marketing, whatever is needed. But, that when that threshold hits though, I guess I would urge people to not think about it as a cost center, but think of it more as a living, breathing thing that's part of the growth and dynamics of the business. You know, it's all intertwined, and I feel like it's something that, just like your website browse experience and your checkout, and you know, people use Shopify when they get started, but then they start customizing it, or they move to their own solution, or whatever. You know, there's these different stages that you go through in all aspects of your business, and logistics and fulfillment and planning are part of that also.
That makes complete sense to me. Like, you can't look at logistics as it's in a silo. It's not an island. It's a part of your strategy because it affects your customers.
Right.
I know we're coming up here on time, and I really wanted to conclude with a question, you know, that we like to get at the end of a lot of our interviews, which is, what trends do you expect to see in logistics that actually stick over the next 18 months or so, the next 12 to 24 months?
You know, I think like, so we talked a little bit, the obvious one is that the channels have all picked up, and I don't think that's going to slow down. And so the mix, inherently what that means is, the even when spending goes back to normal, the channel mix is going to be closer to what it is now. That's my prediction. And so the more interesting thing, though, is what comes out of that. And competition is going to be fierce. You know, you're going to companies that were omni-channel and neglecting their e-commerce channels are going to either not survive, or they're going to invest in them, which is going to introduce more competition into the market. Delivery experience will become more and more important because consumers now have multiple options to choose from. I think the delivery options that are out there are interesting to me, because it's something that has I think this pandemic kind of acted as this accelerant, right? Like like everything else, and I think it became very clear that there's this demand for things like buy online and pick up in store, lockers, new ways of getting inventory to people quickly that's also cost effective, and are somewhere between I want it now, I'm willing to drive to the store, but I also want to shop for the thing online. So that, I mean, that will have a somewhat of a renaissance from the push that this pandemic gave them. I think the other thing that's interesting is just categories that have traditionally struggled with e-commerce are now getting their chance to shine. You know, the grocery is a great example, because it's kind of like the worst case scenario in all things e-commerce, mm-hmm. right? It's low margins. The items are big and bulky and cheap. If you include the frozen part of it in the mix, you have to kind of deliver in a specific window so the food doesn't go bad. People hate, you know, because it's this commodity, people hate planning for it. They don't want to buy it 3 days in advance, which is, time is, you know, the more time you have, the more opportunity you have to plan. And none of that stuff exists. What I see, though, is that there's all of this innovation happening in that space across all the larger companies in some cases, but grocery stores, et cetera, about how to make that whole process smoother. I mean, I was at a grocery store the other day, and a guy was walking around with these basically four carts stacked high. And he was picking into each cart, which clearly corresponded to an order. And, you know, I was thinking like, okay, this is the beginning of a sortation process that we use in an e-commerce setup, but they're now starting to kind of shift how you think about the store to make it more efficient for that model, right? So I think that's, all of those things are going to be affected by the pandemic essentially permanently. And some of it won't work. Some of it will event, you know, they tried it, didn't work, you know, but some of it, the kind of push to actually innovate on this front is going to lead to, and the expectations changing from the consumer is going to ultimately lead to a actual shift in the way that the whole thing runs.
Ooh.
Exciting times ahead.
my gut tells me that, you know, it sounds like you're making sort of bombastic statements. I feel like it's undersold a little bit. I think when we look back in this era, we will say, wow, we were right at the beginning. We didn't even know, like, we're what, 25, 30, 25 years in to e-commerce at the moment. Yeah. Like we're at the very beginning. We have a long way to go. So we're in the infancy of what I think is a fundamental shift in the way that people exchange goods and services in our world. And, gosh, that gets me fired up.
It's exciting. Yeah. This is a good time to be in commerce, and even a better time to be in the future of commerce. So you guys are in a good position.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. And we benefit from the sort of like, oh, future commerce. That sounds like a thing that I want to be part of, is the future of commerce. And Jason, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show.
Truly.
Thank you so much, guys. It's been great talking, and I really enjoyed it. You guys have a good rest of your week.
Yeah, thanks. Same to you. And hey, we do want to thank Shippium for partnering with us to help bring the show to you. And where can people get in touch with Shippium if they were to inquire about what it is you're building over there and how you might be able to help them, Jason?
The easiest way to do it is just go to shippium.com. We have a contact. We have a contact us area that you can send us a mail. And it also has information about our Twitter account and all the other stuff.
Great. Well, thanks for joining. Hey, remember, we all have to participate in commerce to live in this world, right? And that means commerce touches us all. And that means that we believe that commerce can change the world. We all have a part in that. Let's shape the future that we all want to see. And we can do that together. Thank you for listening to Future Commerce.